Welcome back, men. We are in a series entitled How God Makes Men, and Scott Baker, our men's ministry leader, has been taking us through some chapters in a book by Pat Morley that deals with various ways in which God connects with men at different points, crisis points, we'll call them, in their lives. And at those moments, he teaches them, he changes their heart, perhaps changes their affection, even changes the directions of their lives. And of course, we're not looking at their lives solely for the basis of becoming experts in history. Instead, we're looking at the ways in which God will transform a man and refit him for his ultimate purpose and the ultimate direction that he wants that man to go. And so we want to learn, we personally, each of us, what are the intersecting points where God may meet us, and what might be the refining or honing processes that God will use to develop us for the call that he has placed on us, for the purpose that he has for us. So this morning we looked at the life of Gideon. And I believe the title of the chapter was The Unlikely or The Unexpected Leader. And the gist of the story is that Gideon was caught in his own circumstances, like many of us, and was honestly quite consumed with his own circumstances. And God took that and used that to capture his attention, but then challenged him. And in essence, what God says is, Gideon, I know you're concerned about your circumstances and your family's circumstances, but do you think you're the only one that is caught in this? And then, while these words are never spoken, it's as if the angel of God comes to Gideon and says, would you be willing to take your eyes off of your circumstances alone and look out around you? See the nation around you. See the nation around you that has the very same needs, the very same concerns that you have. And Gideon expressed those concerns. God, we've heard about your miraculous works in the past, but where are they? What are we to think about who you are today when we see none of those? And God simply asks Gideon to step out. He calls Gideon by a phrase that Gideon is just completely baffled by. Greets him as a mighty warrior. Now, I mean, if you and I were confronted with that today, what we'd do is we'd look over our shoulder and say, who are you talking to? There's nobody behind me. And that's exactly what God says. God says, I see in you, Gideon, something, if you are willing to step into this call, that you don't yet see in yourself. But if you're going to ever achieve that purpose, then you have to let go of your small ambition simply to survive. And you have to be willing to say, I would be willing to lay down my life and my cause and my goals and instead pick up yours. And I'd be willing to lead your people. And so as you listen to the story and you listen to Scott teach this morning, what I'd like you to do is look at your own life and then look out around you. Is it possible that the biggest struggle that you have in life right now is one that is shared by other people? And is it possible that God would use that meeting point in your life as a means to get your attention and then once he has it, say, hey, look out around you. I know things are tough for you. I'm not negating the fact that life is extremely tough, and maybe you're in a really tough bind right now, but you're not the only one. Could I use you, man of God? Could I use you not only to help correct your own circumstances, but to correct the circumstances of other people? And would you trust me to do that through you? All right, guys. I think you're in for a great lesson for the morning, and look forward to catching up with you again next week.
You're live.
Okay. All right, good morning, man. All right. We're going to get started today, and we're in chapter 4. We're in chapter 4 out of Pat Morley's book, How God Makes Men. And this week, the unexpected leader kind of brought an overwhelming number of emotions to me. So I gave you guys a shorter handout than I'm going to work off of, only because I had so many thoughts, I didn't want to forget any of them. But if you think about this story of Gideon, it's kind of like the old Rocky movie where the Italian stallion's getting pummeled, he's getting beaten down. Every round he's, you know, getting a bigger black eye, more swollen, and it looks more and more bleak that he could even get up and continue the fight. And when it just seems like he has no chance of winning, somehow the bells ring and he gets re-energized, revitalized, and he comes back and has this great comeback victory. So that's kind of like the Midianites beating down the Israelites. And, you know, I'm sure you, as well as myself, have felt beaten down, felt like life has gotten the better of you, that you're kind of up against the odds, and you just get ready to throw in the towel. Well, before you throw in the towel, you know, just visit this the Judges chapter 6 and 7. It's not really that long, but, you know, if you do, you'll see what God is willing to do if you just don't throw in that towel. So, if you guys are ready, we're going to start this this fight, you know, in the count of three, just like that Rocky movie at the end when he's with Apollo Creed. They're both old and kind of retired, and they're kind of looking at each other, and then, you know, the Italian standard goes up and he's ready. So he's, you ready? And he goes, ding, ding. So on the count of three, we're going to ring the bell together and go, ding, ding. All right, one, two, three, ding, ding. All right, so we're in chapter six with the Midianites raiding and impoverishing the land of Israel. They're destroying the crops, they're coming down, they're invading, they're burning the crops, they're killing all the livestock. And this has been going on for 7 years. Alright, they come down each time the harvest is ready. So the Israelites are planting their crops, they're nurturing their crops, they're getting ready to harvest all this wheat and food. And just then the Midianites, the warriors, come down and ruin everything. So time after time, year after year, there's starvation, and there's frustration, there's doubt, there's fear. There are all these emotions going through the Israelites. And just when they're ready to give up and throw in the towel, they call out to the Lord for help. And that's in Judges 6:6. They finally cry out to the Lord for help. So God hears their prayers, and he responds by giving Gideon to save the Israelites. Now, who is Gideon? Gideon's a scared little farmer. He's reluctant. He's hiding in a wine press because that's where he can thrash the wheat. See, they used to just go ahead and thresh the wheat, throw it up in the air, and let the wind blow away the chaff, and then the wheat would fall to the ground. That's what they would use. Well, they can't do this in front of the Midianites because they would steal the wheat. So he's hiding in this wine press with whatever little wheat he can, and he's processing the wheat so he has something to eat, some food for his family. So he's kind of looking out the wine press for the Midianites, and he's thrashing the wheat, looking out, thrashing the wheat. It's kind of like he's a scared little boy hiding from the big bully. So his reasoning for doing that was just simply that he didn't want the Midianites to take what little food he had. So just then, Gideon gets a visit from God's angel. And God's angel says, Gideon, you're the guy. You're going to lead the Israelites out of this mess. And Gideon, being kind of somewhat doubtful and reluctant, he questions the angel. And he says, you know, if God is with us, where are all the miracles that our forefathers talked about? And it's been 7 long years that the Midianites have been pummeled and beaten down, just like Rocky. So what Gideon fails to understand is why the Israelites are really in that situation to begin with. And he asks, you know, the question, why is it that they're going through all this for this long? And I kind of thought of that other movie, you know, A Few Good Men, you know, and I could just see God, you know, calling down to Gideon, you want the truth? You can't handle the truth. So God says, okay, I'll tell you why. You're in this situation because you've been doing evil in the sight of the Lord. You've been have an adultery, even have an idolatry, selfishness, entitlement, abuse, been abusing widows. You only pray to me when you want something. So this brings us to principle number one of how you can get victory in your life. Principle number one, God will use my difficulties to build my faith. God's primary goal is for us to learn to trust in Him no matter what. God reassures Gideon by saying in Judges 6:16, I will be with you, and you will strike down all the Midianites, leaving none alive. See, God wants to use Gideon for something magnificent, but first he has to build up his faith. So, how does God build one's faith? It's simple. He does it by pulling out the rug from under you. He does it by making the odds so great against you. And then, by stepping into your life and delivering you. Thus proving himself worthy, trustworthy, and faithful. But even then, talking to the angel, Gideon still lacks a little bit of faith. So he puts God to a test. Let's call this round one in the big battle. He says in Judges 6:37, look, I will place a wool fleece on the threshing floor. If there is dew only on the fleece and all the ground is dry, then I will know you will save Israel by my hand, as you have said. All right, so he asked God to go ahead and show him that he really is powerful, he can save him, and make the fleece fill with dew, but keep the ground dry. Then he knows that that's a sign from God that Gideon himself can go out and save the Israelites. So the next morning, it comes to be, God does what he says he's going to do, and he only tolerates this test because he wants to build up Gideon's faith. Well, I don't know about you. To me, that seems like my prayer was answered. My test was, you know, successfully completed. I'll move forward, but not Gideon. He says, well, you beat me up pretty good on the first round. Let's go to a second round. So he tests God again. He says in Judges 6:39, then Gideon said to God, do not be angry with me. Let me make just one more request. Allow me one more test with the fleece, but this time make the fleece dry and let the ground be covered with dew. So the next day, Gideon wakes up, and it is. God delivers once again. So, what does God have to do to prepare you for battle? To build your faith? What does he have to do in your life to make you ready to do what he asks you to do? The answer is the same for you and me, just like for Gideon. He's got to pull the rug right out from under you. He's got to cause the bottom to drop out of your life. Then God will come in and deliver you and build up your trust and your faith. You see, God always uses your difficulties to build your faith. This brings us to principle number two. God will often require us to do what seems unreasonable. Now, if you put yourself in Gideon's position and you consider the odds, there was 135,000 well-trained, well-armed warriors in the Midianite army. Gideon's little farmer group, there was only 32,000. And they were scared, fearful farmers. They didn't have any weapons. They didn't have any training. So the odds were really 4-1. Four warriors against one farmer. Now, there's a lot of things we can do in life to say, you know, we can beat the odds. There are the things that, you know, those, you know, March Madness is coming up with basketball, you know, the number 16 seed beating the number 1 seed. It can happen. So, Gideon says, I'll take on those odds. You've passed two rounds of tests, so I'll get ready and I'll go into battle with Midianites. Well, God knows that the Israelites would boast in that victory. He knows that the odds are 4-1. That's achievable to overcome those odds. And that if Gideon took those farmers into battle and won, the Israelites would claim that it was their power, their doing, and they're successful. They would just build themselves up. Their egos would inflate. So what does God do? He says in Judges 7:2, chapter 7, verse 2, "The Lord said to Gideon, 'You have too many men. I cannot deliver Midian into your hands, or Israel would boast against me. My own strength has saved me.'" Now Gideon says, "What do you mean too much men? Too many men? You know, what do I have to do, God? You know, there's 135, there's 32,000, 135,000 versus 32,000. You're telling me I've got too many? What do you want me to do?" Well, God says to Gideon, "Line the men up in the valley. Ask all the men who are afraid to raise up their hand." And Gideon says, "Okay." So he takes all the farmers into the valley, ask them, "Hey, if you're scared, just tell me. You know, put up your hand if you're scared." Well, 22,000 men say, "I'm a big chicken today. I'm kind of fearful that we're going to get slaughtered." So God tells Gideon, "Every man who raised their hand, send them home." So now, there's 135,000 warriors against 10,000. The odds are 13 to 1. And things are looking pretty bad for Gideon at this point. Now remember, when you go into battle, when you go into work, when you go into your situation, that battle always belongs to the Lord. So God tells Gideon, "You know what? The odds are 13 to 1, 10,000 against 135,000, you still have too many men." Well, at this point, Gideon is starting to wonder, do I really want to listen to God? Should I listen to God? Am I listening to the right God? Or am I being set up for failure? It's kind of like that that hiker that's walking along the cliff and falls off the edge. And on his way down, he grabs a hold of that branch, and his feet are dangling. And he looks down, and he sees nothing but rocks at the bottom of this huge drop-off. And he starts crying out for help. "Help, help! Is there anybody up there?" And all of a sudden, he hears the voice from the Lord like Noah. "Yes, it's God." And he says, "Can you help me?" He says, "Okay. Let go." Gideon thinks about this for a minute, or the hiker thinks about this for a minute. He says, "Is there anyone else up there?" So, I mean, I guess the moral of the story is, you know, oftentimes we get an answer that's not what we're looking for. So what God really wants Gideon to learn is to have faith and reduce the number of men again. So he now tells Gideon to take the 10,000 farmers down to the spring of Herod. He says, "Have them take a drink from the spring." Now, he does this. His faith is building. So he takes the men down to the spring. And some of them get down on their hands and their knees, and they start lapping up the water like a dog would do. Then there are some that get down on one knee and start scooping up the water with their hand. So Gideon says to God, "All right, now what?" Well, God says to Gideon, "All the men that got down on their hands and knees and lapped up the water like dogs, send them home. You don't need them." All right, so Gideon's listening now. His faith is building. He sends all 7,700 of those men home. He's left with 300. Well, now the odds are 135,000 strong, capable warriors against 300 farmers. The odds are 450 to 1. You go to the casino and put a little chip down on a roulette table at 450 to 1, that's not a bad return. However, what are the chances that you're going to hit? 450 spins to 1? I mean, the odds aren't really that good. Some might even say the odds are ridiculous. So, why would God make the odds so ridiculous for Gideon? Well, to build his faith and trust. These odds are increased because our response to seemingly insignificant tests will only be a determining factor of what God will do in our lives. Sometimes he gives us a little more money to see what we'll do with it. Sometimes he gives us a job promotion to see how we'll use our authority and our power. Because God can trust us with a little. He will trust us with a lot. And this kind of made me think of like a little metaphor that describes our relationship with God. You know, kind of like the potter and the clay. You know, we're held in the hands of the Creator as He molds us. And He molds us with trials, the wilderness, and pulling out the rug from under us. See, testing comes before perseverance. God needs to know that we'll persevere so He can complete molding us into the man that He wants us to be. In James chapter 1, verses 2 through 4, it says, "Consider it a pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. Let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete and lacking nothing." See, many of us are in that battle, but we're really not serious. We're following Christ, but we're not serious about getting rid of the stuff, the junk, or paying the cost to be fully devoted. Most of us are more interested on how God will do things for our conveniences, or to help us make more money, or help better our positions, or our status, or whatever. Sometimes God may ask us to do things that seem unreasonable, but what He's really doing is shaping, and forming our souls. This brings us to the principle number 3. God will always lead us to do that which gives Him the most glory. See, Gideon and the Israelites wouldn't give God the glory if they had victory when they had 32,000 men. If they defeated the Midianites at that point, they would have believed it was their doing, not God's doing. Not until the odds were increased did they start shifting their power of belief to God. Not even at the 4-1 odds, not at the 13-1 odds, but it wasn't until there was 450-1 odds that it made sense that the only reason they could have victory is because of God. So remember, to continue giving God the glory, even in your trials. We'll all go through some difficult times. We'll all go through tragedies. We'll all have frustrations. We just have to remember to give God the glory that we have the ability to even go through those situations. Because somewhere along the line, He has a message for us. Somewhere along the line, He's building our faith. Somewhere along the line, He's molding us into the man He wants us to be. Next principle, principle number 4. God will usually strip us of everything we depend upon others so that we depend upon Him. See, Gideon had 32,000 men. God said it was too many, and He took away all of them except 300. Now here's the rest of the story about the battle between the Midianites and Israel. Gideon goes to God to hear the plan for the battle. And God tells him to give each man a trumpet, which was really a ram's horn, a clay jar, a torch, and their voice. I don't know about you, but I'm going into battle, and I don't think that that's all the weapons I need. It is a trumpet, a clay pot, a torch, and a voice. Well, Gideon's faith has grown at this point, remember? So, that's exactly what he does. God doesn't provide men to Gideon, or an army of weapons, but He does prepare him with information. The question God asks all of us, when the world around us is falling apart and the rug is pulled out from under us, is what will we run to when life knocks us down? Where will we turn when we're ready to throw in the towel? At that point, God will strip all that from us until we go to Him for help. We all have something we go to other than God to make it through life. Whether it's alcohol, sports, food, shopping, an unhealthy relationship. Whatever that is, God will eventually strip it away from us so that the only place we have left to turn for help is Him. And this is something that John preached about a while back. We're nothing more than a vessel. The more me that's in it, the less room there is for God. The more God that's in it, the less of me that can be in that vessel. So when the rug is pulled out from under us, just think of it. We need more of God. Life without God is like rattling a bunch of pans in the kitchen. It's nothing more than a bunch of noise that irritates us. So, in Gideon's situation, having less men meant God was in control. It says in 2 Corinthians 12:9, "My grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore I will boast in all more gladly about my weakness, so that Christ's power may rest on me." Principle 5. God will send us encouragement when we grow faint-hearted. Just when we're ready to give up and throw in the towel, if you situate yourself around people of God, He will send you just the right word at just the right time, and He'll encourage you to keep your head up and keep on going strong. So keep obeying God, and He will give you the endurance you need. See, this is what God did for Gideon to give him courage. God asked Gideon if he was afraid to go into battle. And Gideon said, "Yeah, kind of, because I'm outnumbered. You know, I don't have any weapons. I'm up against 135,000, you know, well-trained warriors." Well, God built Gideon's faith by doing what? He tells him to take his servant, Purah, to the Midian camp at night and listen in to a dream interpreter kind of explain what this dream meant. So God leads Gideon to a specific tent to hear a specific dream to be explained by a specific interpreter. So Gideon puts his ear against that tent and he listens in. He hears this dream about this big barley loaf falling down the mountain and crashing into the camp and destroying the tent. And the interpreter explains this dream and says, "It's obvious. It's obvious that God has given the Midianites into the hands of Gideon." So this dream interpreter says, God is going to give Gideon the power to defeat the Midianites. Now, I know the dream doesn't make any sense. Didn't make any sense till I read it. Doesn't make any sense when I think about it. But it really doesn't matter. What matters is that God wanted Gideon to hear that He was the one that was going to deliver the Israelites. So Gideon and Purah were so pumped up with confidence that their fear went away. Why? Because his faith and trust in God was so great at this point, nothing could stop him. God had given Gideon the encouragement that he needed. So God will also give you and me the encouragement we need when we get faint-hearted. Some people only come to church seeking God when they need something. Hearing the voice of God takes being in the proximity to people of God. So remember, God will give you the encouragement when you need it. This brings us to the last principle, principle number 6. God is always working on the other side of our desires to accomplish His purpose. You all know how the story ends with Gideon and the Midianites, right? God tells Gideon to take the 300 men, circle the Midianite camp, and wait for his command. So upon the command, they all blow the trumpets, they smash the clay jars on the ground, and they raise their torches and say, "For the Lord and for Gideon." You can refer to Judges 7:18 on that one. You see, Gideon's faith has grown at this point. He doesn't question God at this point, but he goes forward just as God commands. He takes his men and he does just that. During the battle, not one Israelite loses their life. Not one of the 300 farmers is killed. And the reason is because God was there. It was God's victory. God created so much confusion, so much chaos, that the Midianites killed each other. And those that didn't get killed fled. So, if that was the case, and the farmers didn't have to actually, the 300 men didn't actually have to battle, they just kind of created a little ruckus, what was the main weapon that defeated the Midianites? Faith. It was simply the name Gideon. Remember what the dream interpreter said? That Gideon would deliver Israel from the Midianites? So when they heard his name, they panicked. They got confused. They lost their minds. You got to remember, when you do it God's way, it always leads to victory. So I have a couple of personal questions here that I just want you to reflect on. My question to you is, are you willing to be the clay, and will you allow God to be the potter? And will you allow Him to mold your life? If you say yes, then put these six principles into your life and say to God, "You're the potter, I'm the clay. You're the potter, I'm the clay." Ask the Lord to do His work and send you encouragement. And allow Him to finish His work in you. That's really what God wants. That's all He really wants. So when you resign to that in your life, God will move whatever you're facing. He'll deliver you from that hardship, that challenge, that trial. He'll pull you out of the wilderness. He'll give you the encouragement. He'll give you the wisdom that you need to keep on going on so that you don't throw in the towel. So that kind of wraps up the story of this week. And I just had a couple of other questions. Have you ever felt nervous or scared because the odds were stacked against you? And if you did, what did you do? How did you overcome those odds? The other one is, how do you really know if your motivation to do something is coming from God, from God's calling, or from your own desires? What signs are present? Are you seeing any signs? Are you hearing any signs? Even when you feel small and inadequate, do you believe God can still use you to do something extraordinary or unexpected? And the last one is, do you understand how God builds faith by turning fear and weakness into strength? So with that, I'm done. Anybody comments, questions, wisecracks? I'm always cautious to ask about the wisecracks because that's typically the first thing I get before anything else is a wisecrack.
Well, when you're talking about the empty vessel, so many times the battle I see in front of me is really not here. And I think a lot of the Gideon stories I am the Israelites. I'll miss the point if I can win. I'm completely self-sufficient. I'm the worst at that point. Remind me how John the Baptist said, I must decrease so that he can increase. And it seems to me God so often like breaks down the small boxes that I tend to put things in. You know, like I'm focusing on my kids or something in particular, the situation with my wife. And I'm like, usually the box is keeping love out of this. Like, I'm just going to handle this A, B, C. Where God's perspective, his instruction to love, is usually the thing that knocks the walls down. Like, in the broader base, what am I really gaining by winning this coffee cup full of, you know, nothing? Because what I'm keeping out is the whole effect it has on my life, the whole effect it has on other people's lives. You know, like, right. I want to be part of you getting better. I want you to be part of me getting better. That's the kind of thing that gets lost. That's where the box, the boundaries kind of work against it.
Well, we all heard that saying, you know, if it is to be, it's up to me. Well, that's a misnomer. You know, if it is to be, it's up to God. He's the one that decides what happens. He's the one that takes your pride and knocks you down, pulls that rug out. Remember we talked about that a while back? About how you have to become humble, you have to learn humility before he gives you the wisdom and the power. I mean, if we continue to say, it's my doing, I had this victory, I overcame that, I achieved this, and we fail to give God the glory, he's going to sneak up on you and grab a hold of that rug and give it a good yank, and down you'll go. And once you're down on the ground and you kind of, you know, dust off the dirt, when you get up, say, you know what, that didn't feel so good. It was uncomfortable. I didn't like it. I didn't expect it. You know, where's the lesson learned and who's in control? You know, that's the time we start asking for help. And that's what God really wants Gideon to do in this case. He wants him to turn to him for help and understand where that help is coming from, who's truly in control. So when we lose focus in our own lives and say, this is my doing, this is the way I'm going to do it, you know, I've got to solve this problem, and we leave God out of that mix, you know, we become that vessel that's filled with nothing more than ourselves. And we all know that our brain is nowhere close to being as efficient as God's power. So you're right. You need to keep God in the center of your life. Go ahead.
Continue on that idea of, we mentioned, like, people come to church to get something when there's trouble. Brian was saying, you know, less of me, more of God. Last weekend, we were up in Connecticut to visit Chrissy, and they had a conference at their church. And one of the themes, which through the whole weekend, was we come in this world and we live our lives basically for ourselves, and what do we get out of things? Our decisions. If I make this decision, I'll get this benefit. If I stay away from this, then I won't get hurt or whatever. So our whole life is built on me. What do I get out of a situation? But when we come to Christ, that should change, but we're so ingrained with that thinking, we bring that into our Christian life. Now, what can God do for me? How can he help the situation? If I do this, how will God bless me? And that's totally wrong thinking, but that's pretty much the way we continue our lives, because that's been our life up until the point we accepted Christ. So we need to really go through our thought process and, you know, what can I do for God? What can I do for God? And Brian was saying, like, in a situation, what can I do to help this person? Not what can they do to help me? You know, if it's a situation, you know, don't look at yourself. You're supposed, I mean, we all know these scriptures, you know, we crucify not the idea that Christ lives in me, we pick up your cross and deny yourself. We all know the verses, but do we really live that out in our lives? And, you know, I don't think we do too well a lot of times, because, as I said, it's like, that's our history, that's where we lived our lives for so long, and it's a tough transition, but that should be in our mind to know it's not about me anymore. You know, I'm not the center of the universe anymore. It's other people.
Yeah. Okay. I just want
I gave everybody a handout. It's a little news article about this college football player, Alex Amadon. He's leaving Boston College, and he's won all sorts of awards, sets all sorts of college records, and he's the top prospect for the NFL draft as a wide receiver. He's given up the opportunity of millions of dollars for the chance to become a Navy SEAL. Now, I work with a guy that was a Navy SEAL. He tells me that only about 4% who actually go into the Navy SEAL program actually become a Navy SEAL. The dropout rate is 96%. It's huge. Very, very few men have what it takes to become a Navy SEAL. This kid, and think about it, when you were younger, what would you do with $1 million if somebody said, hey, sign up for me, I'll give you $1 million bonus? Here's a signing bonus of several men, like Peyton, Eli Manning for the Giants. When he signed up with the Giants, not even playing one down, his signing bonus to go to that team was $17 million. That's just, for me to think of a college graduate, that's just, I can't comprehend that kind of number. This kid here leaving Boston College is giving up the potential of that kind of a income to come to just try to become a Navy SEAL. You know, and I looked at this article and I said, okay, well, what's my purpose? He felt his calling, his purpose, was to join the Navy SEALs and not go into the NFL. So, what are the odds that he's going to make it as a SEAL? What are the odds that he can make it as an NFL receiver? What are the odds that he's not going to get hurt doing one or the other? So, when we think about what you're calling, what sign is God giving you to pursue that calling? What's your purpose? Do you really understand what you're here for? Where you're going to help somebody else out? Where you're going to glorify God? Apparently, this kid has had some kind of sign that says, I'm going to give up this lucrative occupation of being a well-known NFL receiver to become an unknown Navy SEAL. I don't even know how much a Navy SEAL makes as far as an income, but I can't imagine it's all that much. You know, probably some of us make more than a Navy SEAL would make. But when I saw this article, I just thought it was kind of interesting that here's a young man that must have heard something from God and is pursuing that. He wants to go out and help other people. He wants to help out the community. He wants to help out mankind. And he feels this is the way he can contribute. So, yeah, I just want you to, you know, take a look at that. Think about it in your own life and say, where can you most glorify God? And do you even know what your purpose is? Sometimes that rug pulling event brings us down to the point where we start thinking about those questions. You know, when we're ready to throw in the towel, we start thinking about, well, am I really doing what God wants, or am I frustrated because I can't do what I want? So, all right. Anybody else?
I just like that one quote he had. Gideon kind of went through a process, but Morley made that one quote to the effect that God doesn't mind teaching us how to swim by throwing us in the deep end. So it's just like all of a sudden you find yourself in these situations that it wasn't even a process of getting it. Boom, you're there. But still God's there to teach you something.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Also, I remember quoting there too. He said that he doesn't see us as we see ourselves. We see ourselves the way we are now and the strength that we have now. We see what's possible and what we're able to accomplish.
All right, well, you see yourself as the lump of clay. God sees us as this finished product. So, you're exactly right. Anybody else? All right, thank you, gentlemen.